catching you up on the latest stories that you should know heading into this Friday morning, March 24th. I'm Jake Reyes, and this is The Point from WUFT News. Who lives in a pressurized habitat under the sea? Dr. Deep Sea, that's who. In 2012, a retired U.S. Navy commander and biomedical engineer joined the team of filmmaker James Cameron's Deep Sea Challenger mission to the bottom of the Mariana Trench, more than 35,000 feet under the sea level. But there was one thing that stuck with him in that dive. The team found an organism that could potentially be used to treat Alzheimer's disease. Now, the biomedical engineer, Joseph Dettori, is attempting to break a world record by living underwater for 100 days to discover more scientific breakthroughs. He joins us on The Point podcast from his habitat, about 22 feet under the sea, off the coast of Key Largo, Florida.
You know, my girlfriend and my mother threw me a going away party, and that was that. So that was the last time I saw those people. Was 25 days ago, and you won't see him for 100 days. But remember, it's not just that. It's, you know, you're under pressure, so we got to do decompression, we got to do other sorts of stuff. So this is kind of a big project. We're down here to do three different things. One is to do biomedical research on the human body to find out how pressure affects the human body in a long-term project. Now, we've never done that before to this duration, for sure. No humans ever stayed up longer than 74 days under the atmospheric pressure of water. So that being one thing, then we're reaching out to kids and we're doing a lot of outreach just for science, technology, engineering, and math. Talk to them about pressure, volume, temperature, relationship, that kind of stuff. Get them excited about doing research. And the third and final thing is I'm talking with a whole bunch of my friends in the underwater industry. So PhDs in marine science, PhDs in ichthyology or FIS research, benthic geologists who look at the ocean things on the bottom of the ocean floor, a whole host of the who's who in the underwater and diving world, so that we can, once again, help those kids with outreach and get interested in science and to talk about and highlight the things that are important in those scientists' world, not just what's important in my world, because I'm a biomedical engineer and the ichthyologist or fish guy, he's thinking differently, right? So, but it's all an important thing.
So what are the advantages of being able to conduct these experiments underwater versus on land?
Yeah, so when you choose to live in the ocean, you get to experience those things in the ocean. Like, for instance, I have been right here, sitting right there. I don't know if you can see the white rock right there. We put that out there, and it turns out that the lobsters like the white rock. So the lobster kind of chilling on that white rock, that's a lobster that I named Fred. Well, Fred is really about ready to molt. And when I was sitting up, I got to watch Fred molt. You only get to do stuff like that when you live here, right? Like when you can walk out the door and see it. It's like knowing that your next door neighbor is Johnny, but knowing that the person three doors down from him is Sally, and Sally and Johnny don't get along, but Frankie across the street, you know what I'm saying? You get to live in that neighborhood and get to understand people. So I'm living in this neighborhood. I'm watching stuff. I brought a microbiologist down here, and we took a sample of the ocean floor, right? And this sample right here that we took from the ocean floor right outside the habitat, and this place has been dove about a million times by a million different people. There's a new species to science in here, a new psyllid, a single-celled organism in here, new to science, never been seen before. But you got to look, you got to live there, you got to think to collect the dirt that's right outside your front door, and maybe you'll find something brand new.
Wow, and you were just able to find that in just 23 days. So is there anything else you've accomplished in the past 23 days that you'd like to highlight? And is there other projects that you're building upon?
Yeah, so continually I'm doing biomedical research on myself. So basically I'm taking blood, urine, saliva. We're figuring stuff out. You know, we're watching and drawing trend lines. And, you know, over this process, you know, I'm taking psychosocial examinations and evaluations regularly, checking in with a psychologist, because we're in an isolated, confined, extreme environment. So we really want to make sure that we're going to be okay, not just me as a person, but our society, right? And everybody's like, well, why 100 days? And it's not the 100 days. I don't care. It's not a world record I'm seeking. It's we're going to go to Mars And Mars is a 200-day trip. The minimum trip to get to Mars, it's almost 200 days. So if we're going to Mars, don't you think we ought to figure it out here first and figure out all the psychosocial problems? Oh, we have to make sure that people are class one on dental. We should probably remove everybody's appendix before they go to Mars, because that could be something that, you know, that kind of stuff. Get everybody in a diet, a regimen, eating the right way. How are we going to work with the zero gravity thing? How are we going to build muscle underwater? I'm working with a project from NASA to talk about increasing nitric oxide synthase by only using these bands. And that's all we have is resistance bands to do workouts, because, well, that's what they have on the International Space Station. So that's what we're doing. You know, that kind of stuff, measuring muscle mass, measuring tissue, figuring out how to get an increase in nitric oxide synthase and that kind of thing. So, you know, we're just trying to help the science of the space flight and underwater restoration ecology, you know.
Interesting, interesting. I have a brother who's a scientist himself, so once he hears this episode, I'm pretty sure he'll be blowing up my phone to learn a little bit more about your projects. So now I just want to have a little bit of fun with this interview. Can you tap the glass so our listeners can hear that you're actually underwater in a habitat?
All right, come with me. Let me show you. So every good hotel has a pool, right? That's my pool. That's the sucking sound in the pool been sucking the gas out. So it sucks out the carbon dioxide out of the pool, and that's the low point in here. But that's how you get in and out of the habitat. And by the way, this is my teeny little bedroom. It's about 8 feet by about 4 feet wide. And not only is it 8 feet by 4 feet wide, it's that's a twin size bed on the bottom, and the bunk on top barely fits my shoulders. I'm 6'1", 220 pounds. I cannot fit in the top bunk, no way. So the bottom bunk is the biggest bunk, and that's a twin bunk. So yeah, that's my whole habitat. That's my whole place of living. This is where I am for 100 days. Now I can go out and go scuba diving and, you know, swim, but can't really do much of anything except that.
That's really cool. So when it comes to living in a situation like this, how do you get your food and other supplies that you may need?
Yeah, you see that pool? People come in through the pool and they drop stuff off. I get a delivery once every 3 days, fresh fruit and vegetables, stuff like that. And I get to, you know, I get to put in requests. You know, you basically, you're trying to live as an isolated, confined, extreme environment, but you cannot store 100 days worth of food. So here it is. We're going to talk about going to Mars. We got to store 200 days of food minimum just for the trip out there. And then some sort of a growth desire to grow things while we're transiting so that when we get there, we can have more food. You know, It's like a bigger project than everybody thinks. Everybody's like, we're going to Mars. And I'm like, you better think that through first, just a little bit. There's a lot of things to think about.
Got it. What's the most challenging part of living underwater?
100% logistics. It's always hard. Surface is my only link to the outside. I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm trying to transit stuff back and forth. I'm trying to, you know, get them to give me emails. I'm trying to do my science. Every bit of the sampling that's done, you know, like when we send samples up and down, they have to go in these, right? So when these go up, they're filled with pressure because I'm at a higher pressure than you are. So these are filled with pressure. So you got to make sure they're tight and capped and they don't explode with pressure by the time you get them to the surface. And then once they got to be uncapped, let the pressure out, then recap, then sent off. It's just a logistical nightmare. But that's the hardest part of living underwater, man, is the pressure change.
That was biomedical engineer Joseph Dottori on why he's living underwater for 100 days. You can catch up with his experiments on his Instagram page at Dr. Deepsea. Now, let's catch you up on today's top stories from around the state. A universal school choice plan is heading to Governor Ron DeSantis' desk. WFSU is reporting the new program makes every school-aged child in the state eligible for an education savings account that can be used on related expenses, or a private school tuition stipend. However, the effort has come over increasingly objections of mostly Democrats, teachers' unions, and public school districts. A new study claims surging population in Florida and rising seas could lead to more of the state being paved over. According to WLRN, the report released by the University of Florida and 1,000 Friends of Florida states about 1 million more underdeveloped acres could be paved over in less than two decades. Potentially, the hardest hit areas could be large, intact rural lands that offer the best hope for saving wild Florida. Walt Disney World Resort and its union workers reached a deal to raise the minimum pay to $18 an hour. Florida Politics reports that full-time employees previously worked a minimum of $15 an hour. The proposed deal would also eventually increase the starting pay to $20.50 by October of 2026. To make the contract official, union members will vote on the deal on March 29th. Subscribe to The Point newsletter, which drops the latest Florida stories into your inbox Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. Visit WUFT.org to subscribe and view the most recent issues. I'm Jake Reyes, and you've been listening to The Point from WUFT News out of the University of Florida's College of Journalism and Communications. Have a great day.